You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Ken Korak, radio broadcaster for the Oakland A's. And Ken, Happy New Year. Happy 2018.
Yeah, well, thank you, Danny. I think it's going to be a great year, especially around baseball. And I know from the A's standpoint, they're really excited to get things going.
Ken, are you the kind of person who makes resolutions for yourself, or do you kind of just go with the flow of the year?
That is a great question. I think I've gravitated back and forth. I think there have been years when I've said, the heck with it, I'm not going to change, there's nothing I can do. And yet there are years where I think, especially like, you know, my wife and I usually go out on New Year's Eve, and that's a time to reflect on the past year and maybe think about what you'd like to accomplish in the following year. So I'd be lying if I said I didn't, at least on occasion, have some New Year's resolutions.
I like it. Okay, so what about for the Athletics? If you could make one resolution for them, what would it be in 2018?
The A's resolution for 18. I would say that the resolution would be to make this a great year for the A's fans. And I think with any ball club, any sports team, that should be kind of almost the resolution, because that's what it's all about. And that's ultimately, we really work for the fans. So, and I'm really optimistic about this. And I think on a couple of levels. Number one, we saw last year with the emergence of the young players at the A's, I think they have a great shot to take a leap forward this coming season with their young players. And I think it's important to show the A's fans that there's progress. And I'm confident that's going to happen. There's some really exciting young talent on the club. And then concurrent to that would be the celebration for the 50th anniversary of the A's in Oakland. And that's going to be a wonderful thing. As you know, Danny, there's so many great players have graced the A's, and so much success and colorful personalities. It's been a wonderful history over the last half century. So that will be celebrated as well.
Yeah, absolutely, Ken. And like you mentioned, 50 years of baseball in Oakland, and so many things have happened. And I'm just wondering, from your standpoint, as you look back but also look ahead, can you maybe name a few moments that have stood out to you or some things that you hope will still happen?
Well, of course, before I got there, and I was a fan of the club, but winning three straight championships in 72, 3, and 4. But then on a personal level, I started going to A's games in the late 70s, and I took a cassette recorder and sat in the stands, and that's how I made my audition tape. So going to the Coliseum was something that was really close to my heart. And I mentioned the fans earlier, and I don't think you last as long as I have with the club, and I've been there for almost half their time in Oakland without great support from the fans. So the A's have had this wonderful vibe at the ballpark, and I think even when the crowds aren't that big, and I've heard other announcers say this, that even if the crowds aren't that big, there's a wonderful kind of funky vibe, and I mean that in the most positive way, at the Coliseum, because the energy there really gets going. And again, from a personal standpoint, how many announcers had the opportunity that I had to have a 15-year stretch in which the A's went to the postseason 8 times? And I think any sports franchise would love to say that they had been part of that.
Yeah.
8 postseasons in 15 years, and included during that stretch, a 20-game winning streak, Dallas Braden's perfect game. So we've had a lot to celebrate in Oakland.
Absolutely. And another thing to celebrate, Ken, is Haley Alvarez, just 24 years old, and she was just recently hired by the A's as the scouting coordinator, making her the first woman in their front office to be hired as a talent evaluator. And she's going to have multiple different roles with the team. How exciting is it to see a woman in this position now in 2018?
It's fabulous. And, of course, Pam Pitts has worked in the A's front office, I think, for over 25 years. So, but this is it's a wonderful thing. And, first of all, she's from the Bay Area. So I'm sure it's, at least to some degree, a dream come true for her. And she has a wonderful background in baseball. Let me make this clear. The A's, you know, she is a woman, obviously, but the A's weren't going to hand out kind of a gratuitous position just because she is a woman. She's earned this. And going back to her days and just reading some of her biographical information, going back to her days in college at Virginia when she worked with the baseball team there and then serving as an intern in baseball organizations, going to scout school. So David Forrest and Billy Bean obviously feel very strongly that she's a wonderful addition to the organization, whether she is a woman or a man. There's a job to be done, and I'm sure that she is eminently qualified and she'll do a great job.
Absolutely. I'm excited to see what comes from that, and hopefully she's just leading the way for other women to make their own paths in baseball as well, Ken. The Athletics, though, Ken, back to them, have a few questions that they need answered, and Jane Lee, I know she's traveling the world right now. She wrote about this. Five things in particular, how reliable the rotation could be, who's going to be behind the plate, when will Franklin Barreto join the party, is Chris Davis here to stay, and what will become of the stadium? Lots of very big, big, important questions. But in your eyes, Ken, which seems to be the top priority?
Those are all excellent questions. I think the question about catching, I think, is one that needs to be answered. There is this kind of sidebar story about Bruce Maxwell and the legal issues that he's been dealing with. And then the A's collectively behind the plate, I don't think there's any question, they need to improve their production behind the plate in 2018. So that would be one area that I think they need to improve in. The other thing is they have a very good young rotation, but still somewhat unproven. They don't really have a veteran anchor to that staff, and many of those starters had injuries last year, so I think potentially they could have a very good rotation, but still they have to evolve and become a complete veteran solid rotation. And then one area I'm really excited to see but might be a little bit of a question mark would be in center field. Now, they in the Sonny Gray deal, one of the acquisitions was Dustin Fowler, as you know, but he's coming off an injury, serious injury in Chicago during his major league debut. Mm-hmm. And it might be unrealistic to expect that he's going to step right in and do a great job. Actually, you know, he missed an entire year. They have Boog Powell, the addition of Stephen Piscotty. So I would say right now, to me, how things evolve and emerge, the young players emerging in center field, the young rotation developing, taking the next step, and looking for more production behind the plate.
Okay. All right. I like that order, too. There's a lot to be excited about. I think that's what these questions mean. There's definitely a lot surrounding the A's. But I'm wondering, Ken, as we are leaving the offseason, we're heading into the preseason, pitchers and catchers are reporting soon to spring training. Is there still a big piece missing for the Athletics as they start to make their way through 2018?
Well, I think like a lot of clubs, and you wouldn't automatically say that the A's going into the season are contenders. We would like to hope they will be contenders. Things have to fall into place. I think more than saying there's one big question mark, because I think they're potentially solid in every position, but things have to break right. You have to have success with good health during a season. And then you have to have players that have very good years. And part of that involves young players maturing. And guys we haven't even talked about. And who knows the impact that young players who will start the year in the minor leagues might make on the ball club. And that'll be part of the whole process and the great story that'll be told of the 2018 Oakland A's. What about young guys that they've taken a great step in their farm system? Will we see some of those guys at the midway point of the season toward the end of the year? And then can we look back at the end of the season and say, boy, this club took a big step in 2018.
All right, Ken. Well, I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm excited to chat with you, to chat with Jane Lee. And if anyone hasn't gotten their fix of the Athletics, you can go to athletics.com and read all of Jane's work, and you can obviously listen to Ken as he calls the games for the A's once that season starts. Ken, do you call spring training games too?
We do. We don't do every game, but historically we've done every weekend game. We occasionally mix in a couple of night games and maybe a game or two against the Giants if it's during the midweek. But right now, I think the schedule looks pretty solid as far as the weekend games are concerned down in Arizona.
All right, sounds good.
So, yeah, we'll be going down there before you know it.
That's right, that's right. Well, for MLB.com Extras, I'm Danny Wexelman with Ken Korak. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with T.R. Sullivan, who covers the Rangers for MLB.com. T.R., Happy New Year. Happy 2018. How are you doing?
Hi, Danny. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. We're doing good. TR, are you the kind of person who makes resolutions, or do you just go with the flow?
I always say every new year that I'm going to read more in 2000 and whatever. That's my New Year's resolution every year, is to read more.
Read more books, read more newspapers, what?
Read more books.
Read more books. All right. So do you have a list of books that you're going to be reading this year that you can share with us, or no?
The first book on my list is one I've been trying to read for 30 years and I haven't finished it, but I'm going to finish it now, and that's The Once and Future King.
Okay. All right. I'm going to check back in with you and make sure that you're fulfilling this resolution, okay?
Okay. That sounds good.
All right. So enough with your resolutions, which are important, but also important are the Rangers. So if you could give, if you could make one resolution for them in 2018, what would it be?
Well, if I only had to pick one, I'd say throw more strikes. I mean, that's what everybody's resolution for this team is quit walking so many batters and throw the ball over the plate. And obviously everybody else has a second resolution, is that to draw more walks and strike out less on offense. I mean, those are the two big things that everybody is talking about with the Rangers, is they need to cut down the walks on the pitching side, and they need to cut down the strikeouts on the hitting side.
Okay, I like that resolution. That's pretty good. I haven't gotten one that specific yet, so I like that. So, TR, you wrote about five questions that the Rangers need to answer in 2018. You wrote about rotation validity, health, closer questions, overlooked impact players. So besides throwing more strikes, which wasn't really on here, which is great, which question is top priority for you?
Well, Danny, I think there's still, I think if you talk to anybody who follows the Rangers, they're still wondering about this starting rotation. I mean, they've got Cole Hamels and Martin Perez leading off, and they've added Doug Fister, Matt Moore, and Mike Minor. And we all know there's a lot of question marks with this rotation. You know, Fister did not have a great season last year. Matt Moore did not have a great season last year. Minor was fabulous, but he was as a reliever. He hasn't started in 3 years. You know, the big thing is, there's two big questions that everybody's wondering about. Number one is, are they going to sign Yu Darvish? And so far, all signs point to no, but, you know, Darvish is still unemployed, so until he signs, everybody's going to at least have it in the back of their mind. And the second big question is, they need a lot more pitching depth. So I think what you're definitely going to see, regardless of what they do with Darvish or not, is you're going to see, you know, two or three or more guys sign as a on the minor league contract, guys who, you know, have had success in the big leagues in previous years and, you know, have fallen by the wayside, whether it's by injury, poor performance, age, whatever. But there are a lot of those guys out there, and I think the Rangers are going to probably have to sign two or three of them. And who knows? You know, you might see them take a chance on somebody like a Jake Peavy or somebody like that. I mean, this is a club that likes to do that and has done that on occasion in the past. I think you'll see, basically, you'll see some interesting free agent signings as far as a starting pitcher here come the next 6 weeks. You know, whether it's Darvish or somebody who's totally off the grid, you know, I'm not sure, but they definitely need more starting pitching depth.
Okay, and I liked your point also of overlooked impact players, because oftentimes there are guys on the team who aren't the most outspoken or the most flashy, but they are important to winning those however many games it takes you to get into the postseason. So I liked that point a lot. You also had a mailbag recently, TR, and this is fun. This is for fans to submit questions to you. People who are watching the team closely usually have pretty in-depth questions, and you had a fan ask about bargain pitching and a lack of interest in winning now. And I loved your response. You cleared up the winning now portion, explaining that obviously they're trying to do that. But what about the part of the starter? And you just kind of mentioned that a little bit, but, you know, Yu Darvish, Jake Arrieta, Jake Peavy, you know, there are still a ton of names on the market. What can you say to Rangers fans who are wondering why, you know, the Rangers are going after bargain pitching?
Well, Danny, one of the things is I think you got to look at it from this standpoint. I think the Rangers took a right approach from the beginning, is they came into this offseason with three holes in their starting rotation, and those holes were not going to be filled from within. So they had to go out and get three guys. And they moved aggressively early, and they got three guys, Doug Fister, Matt Moore, and Mike Minor. So now they have a full rotation. Now they can be creative. You know, maybe they go after Darvish. Maybe they go after somebody like Jake Peavy. Maybe they just go after some lower guys that, you know, like they did with A.J. Griffin and Jeremy Guthrie. But at least they have a rotation that they can work off. They have a base. And now instead of trying to plug holes, now they're just trying to upgrade or find a way to make it even better. So I think the first step this offseason, as I said, they had to buy in bulk. We knew that. They had to go out and get three guys. And until you get three guys, I mean, you could have gone out and signed, you know, Sandy Koufax, and that's great, but you still have two holes in the rotation. So mm-hmm. what they've done is they filled the rotation. That was the first half of the offseason. Now I think they're going to look for ways to maybe upgrade it, whether, you know, maybe a guy like Darvish's price comes down or Jake Arrieta or Alex Cobb or somebody like that. Maybe their price comes down to where the Rangers can afford them or something like that, or they find a couple of gems hidden somewhere. Who knows? But at least they have the rotation filled at this point.
Okay. All right. So everyone should just, you know, quit pushing the panic button and relax. What about the Rangers World Series drought, TR? Is this the year they break their drought?
I mean, the wise money says no. They're not ready yet. They still have a lot of work to do in the pitching department. Look, the Rangers can make the playoffs this year or postseason this year simply because they could have a great offense. I mean, if Joey Gallo and Nomar Mazara really take off, which I think they will, and Delino DeShields, you put them in there with Beltre and Chu and Andrus and those guys, and I think you can really have a dynamic lineup that scores 850 to 900 runs. I mean, that's not too far-fetched if everybody stays healthy. But I think to be a great team and win a World Series, you know, you need to have, you know, the kind of starting pitching and the kind of pitching staff that, you know, you've seen in the past with the Royals, obviously, and the Indians and the Cubs and, you know, even the Astros last year. And, you know, that pitching staff can still be built during the season. You know, maybe a young kid like Jose Leclerc steps up, or, you know, maybe they make a trade in July or even in June. You know, you can still build a team as the season goes along. But right now, you know, even with a potential of having a great offense, there's still a lot of work left to be done.
All right. Well, you know that. GM John Daniels knows that as well. But what's interesting to me is that he's come out and said that he's not necessarily willing to give up the team's top prospects to add to this current team. He's being cautious with depleting the farm system. The farm systems are obviously very important to teams. It's important to show growth in that way. So what's the answer to getting top talent if he's not willing to give up top prospects?
Well, right now, I think, you know, you're not those top players. Like you look at the Astros getting Justin Verlander. They got him on August 31st last year. I mean, those guys really aren't available right now. You know, everybody talks about Matt Harvey being a guy, but he's a one-year rental, and then he's going to be a free agent, and who knows where he is after, you know, he slipped the last couple of years. But, you know, you're not going to get Madison Bumgarner or those guys. I mean, you know, if you want to spend some money and go get Jake Arrieta or you want to go get Yu Darvish, that's fine. But really, Danny, the bottom line with the Rangers is they have to get back to developing their own pitching. They have to get back to bringing their own prospects along and having some impact pitchers come up from the minor leagues. When they went to the World Series, they had guys like young pitchers like Derek Holland, Alexia Gondo, and Matt Harrison come up from the farm system, and they ended up being impact players. And, you know, C.J. Wilson was their own homegrown talent. So if you look at that team, yeah, they did trade for Cliff Lee 1 year, but most of that rotation was something that they built themselves from their farm system, and that's what they're going to have to do again to get back to that level.
All right, well, I'll quit pounding you with questions about the rotation, TR, and hopefully maybe the next time we talk, the Rangers will have added someone to the roster, but we'll wait and see. And if you need more of your Rangers fix, you can go to Rangers.com and read all of TR's incredible work. But that's going to do it for us this week, TR. Does that sound good for you?
Thank you, Danny.
Again, if you want to go to Rangers.com, this is it for MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman, and we will talk to you next week. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Brian McTaggart, who covers the Astros for MLB.com. Brian, happy new year. Happy 2018. How's your year going so far?
So far, so good, Danny. Happy new year to you.
Thank you. Thank you. So we're going to talk about resolutions, Brian. But first, I want to know, are you the kind of person who makes them for yourself, or do you just kind of go with the flow?
Not really. I just kind of go with the flow. I mean, you know, I always want to eat right, exercise more. But, I mean, that's something that you know, I try to do every day, but don't. So I'm not a big guy that sits out and makes these goals and expectations and things like that. So
yeah.
I just hope we just keep trucking into 2018 and keep this rolling.
All right. I like it. I like it. Okay. On to the Astros resolutions. If you could make one for them for 2018, what would it be?
Well, I would like to see them stay healthy. you know, because I, you know, they had so many injuries last year. You know, they're still able to win the World Series because they got healthy in time for the playoffs. But I would like to see what this team could do with this core. It's probably the last year this whole core is together. Verlander a whole year. You know, Correa was out for a couple months. I just like to see what they could do healthy for a whole year. I mean, I think this could be a really special team if Keuchel can make 32, 33 starts, if McCullers can finally stay healthy and do the same, if Morton can, you know, stay healthy. You know, that's a lot to ask. Morton has had a lot of injury problems. You know, Verlander's going to be 35. So, you know, you're asking a lot. But, you know, I think if they could stay healthy, I mean, they run away with the division. I think they would by far have the best record in baseball. And in the playoffs, you never know what can happen. I mean, one game could really swing it either way. But considering all the injuries they had to overcome this year, I think they're due at least a little bit of good luck in the injury department. So that would be my resolution for them, would be to just remain healthy and good health for the new year.
I like that. And you also talked about that when you addressed five questions that the team needs to answer coming into the season. You talked about repeating, staying healthy, rebounding bullpen, a full season with Verlander, which you just kind of talked about a little bit. So I want to know, we already talked about staying healthy as well. Do you think that repeating is a top priority? Is the rebounding bullpen a top priority over one another?
Well, I think repeating obviously is the number one goal. I mean, the bullpen rebounding is going to be a big part of it. Now they have added a couple of key pieces to that the last month with Smith and Rondon. Those are going to be a couple of key pieces. But no team has repeated in a long time. And, I mean, you win the World Series, it's almost like, yeah, we did it. And you're like, well, now what? Well, now you get to try to do it again. And I think they're poised to do that just based on what they have coming back. Like I said, they have their whole core coming back pretty much. They have their whole rotation coming back. A couple of key bullpen pieces are back. Marwin Gonzalez, key bench player who's not really a bench player. He plays every day. He's back. So if any team was ever going to do it, this is the team, because they're going to have, like I said, they're going to have Verlander for the whole year. You know, if Correa doesn't get hurt, he's here for a whole year. He's MVP material. Springer's MVP material. Altuve is the MVP. Bregman, I think, has a chance to really blossom into a superstar this year. It's just going to be such an exciting team to watch. And I think the Yankees in the late 90s, when they pulled off that stretch there three in a row, they were the last team to repeat. So
yeah.
Astros are sitting pretty. If they really have a shot to do it, and I think it's something they're really, really going to strive for. And it's going to be every bit, I think, a big of a carrot in front of them as just winning their first one in 2017 was.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm eating carrots. Well, not right now, but I was eating them earlier, Brian. So I just got a little confused when you were talking about carrots. But that is a carrot. That's a big carrot to dangle in front of them. I was eating my lunch a little bit earlier. And an important piece of that success, of the potential repeat, is Dallas Keuchel. And Brian, I saw your interaction with him on Twitter, and you called him out for turning 30, and he replied that you're a gentleman and a scholar. And
true.
You guys have quite a bit of interactions on Twitter. He's good about that.
Yeah, he is. You know, I've covered Dallas since the day he was drafted, and he was always a guy you followed in the minor leagues. You're like, huh, this six round pick lefty, he's moving up a little bit. Oh, he's a AAA. Keep an eye on him. And you know, he gets called up, and, you know, a couple of years, he's up and down between the minor leagues. And, you know, I interviewed him a few times about getting sent down after, he got knocked around. And I'll never forget, I think it was 2013 maybe, I'm driving into the facility, in spring training facility in Kissimmee one morning, and he's driving out. This is like 7:30 in the morning, or I was walking in. I guess I was walking in, and he was driving out, and he stopped. And I'm like, did you get cut? He's like, yep. I mean, he's just, the guy's career was at a crossroads. He's like,
wow.
Is he even going to stick in the big league? So I've just covered him a long time, and I'm really happy to see him, you know, on a personal level, to have that success. And you know, in the off season, you don't get to see these guys every day, so it's fun every now and then when you tweet something and they tweet back, at least recognize a little bit of that you're still out there, you're still alive, you're still covering the team. And yeah, Dallas turned 30 on New Year's Day, so he's over the hill by some baseball standards, but maybe he's still got a couple of good years ahead of him. I don't know. I know that he's going to be a free agent after this year, so he's got a chance to get that one big contract, or six-year deal, and it's going to take a strong 2018 to really get a big deal for him.
And, Brian, who's your favorite follow on Twitter, besides me?
Besides you, of course.
Yes.
Well, baseball-related, you know, Correa and Bregman and McCullers, you never know what they're up to. They're and they're usually not sitting still. They're at a game. They're off at some event. At least McCullers and Correa are very, very public with their McCullers wife and Correa's fiance. They're always out together, and you know, I'm always clicking on to see what they're doing, what they're wearing, where they're at. They have front row tickets to a basketball game, or you know, living the life that I'll never get to live. But it's you know, they're good guys, and they're really eating up every minute of the World Series. So I like following those guys around. Bregman was at the big UFC fight, I've got you Central Florida on my brain. UFC fight last weekend, and so like I said, I mean, you don't talk to these guys for a couple of months, really. But it's with social media now, you can really keep up to what's going on in their lives. It's kind of fun to follow along.
Yes, they're all very social, They deservedly so. So I also enjoy following the shenanigans and the community work they do as well. They are still doing things in the community.
Oh yeah,
which is outstanding.
Yeah, all three of those guys really. Yeah, I mean, a bunch of the Astros very active in the community. McCann as well. He's out there a lot. And, but, yeah, those three guys particularly, too, Correa, McCullers, Bregman, been very active in the community. And so, you know, you got to tip your hat. They're all three in their early 20s. They don't have to do that kind of stuff, but they do.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. Also cool, an invitation to the White House, Brian. The Astros got theirs for winning the World Series, first time in team history. Have you heard any response or reaction from players or front office members?
Yeah, I talked to Reed Ryan recently about the invitation to the White House. He said the team is really excited. They can't wait to go. They're facing a little bit of a logistical challenge. They don't play the Nationals, of course, Washington, D.C. They don't play them this year in the National League. They do play the Orioles, but not till the last four games of the year, which really is not an ideal time to be jetting off to the White House. So Reed said that they are looking at a possible spring visit while they're at spring training, maybe taking a day off. Going up to the White House, so that's coming up pretty quick. But
wow,
you know, he said it was just an honor that they were invited, and they were really looking forward to it. I know in the days after they won the World Series, that some of the players spoke out and said they were, you know, looking forward to it. If they were invited, they would go. So I expect a strong Astros turnout when that happens. But it looks like it'll happen probably. Maybe in the next 6 to 8 weeks. So that's pretty exciting if you're a member of the Astros.
And that means that you'll go as well, right, Brian?
Well, I hope so. You know,
yeah.
I've always wanted to be in the White House, so it's my chance to go in there and really make a change and at least poke in my head and see what it's like. But yeah, I know. I hope I get to do it. I mean, it'd be get a chance to go inside the White House is, you know, something you never dream about. And I know a lot of players are the same way. And even, well, you know, they have a lot of foreign-born players on that team, and that's going to be a huge deal for them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we'll watch out for that for an announcement, hopefully coming soon. Brian, we have officially exited the off season. We're entering preseason, and just right around the corner from pitchers and catchers, like you said, reporting for spring training, which is super exciting. We have a lot to cover and catch up on. And if you have not gotten your fix of Astros knowledge, you can go to astros.com and read all of Brian's work. Brian, I appreciate your time so much.
Thank you, Danny. Yeah, hope we... next few weeks, some things pick up, hot stove, some news, and next thing you know, we'll be talking about some games out on the field. So it's going to get here sooner than later, but look forward to it and have a great 2018.
That's right. We are full steam ahead. For Brian McTaggart, I'm Danny Wexelman. Thanks for tuning in. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Maria Guardado, who covers the Angels for MLB.com. Maria, Happy New Year. Happy 2018.
Happy New Year to you too, Danny.
We're going to talk about resolutions in a second, but I want to know, do you make them? Are you the kind of person who writes them down, or you kind of go along as the year goes along making goals?
To be honest, I'm not really a resolutions person. I mean, I feel like in past years, I kind of have tried to do that, but I've been terrible about sticking to them. So, you know, at this point, it's kind of just like, you know, I'm not going to make anything official or write anything down, but.
No,
you know, everyone always wants to lose weight and stuff like that. So, you know, I'll try to get to shape, but we'll see how long that effort lasts.
No, I'm the same. I think that you change throughout the year, so your goals are going to change. So you should set them as you go. And I think Jimmy Nelson was on Twitter bashing all the resolutionists. So he clearly not for that process. But everyone, I think, is a little bit different. But I am going to ask you to make one resolution for the Angels in 2018.
Sure. So I think that if I had to make a resolution for the Angels, I think it would be to keep their starting pitchers healthy. I mean, that's a problem that has really kind of hurt them the last couple of years. You know, Garrett Richards and Tyler Skaggs, Andrew Heaney, and a bunch of those guys missing a lot of time. And, you know, the Angels haven't really had that depth to kind of overcome those big injuries. So I think that's really going to be key for them going into this year. You know, they've done a lot of moves to kind of bolster their lineup with re-signing Justin Upton and getting Ian Kinsler and Zach Cozart. But, you know, I think the success of their season is really going to hinge on the health of their starting pitchers. So, you know, that would be my resolution for the Angels, because I think that that's going to be the run factor that's really going to, you know, affect how they end up doing this season and whether or not they can kind of get back into October or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that they are the difference makers. And you wrote about 5 questions that the Angels need to answer this season. And you touched on healthy rotation. You touched on Albert Pujols staying healthy. You also touched on Ohtani's ability to play two ways successfully, which I also was thinking about the other day. I hadn't read your article yet, but I was thinking about resolutions for baseball. And that I, on the same note, I was thinking that I would love for the Angels to give him that chance to succeed both ways and have the ability to showcase the talent that he has on both sides. But I'm wondering, through all these questions that you think need to be answered, which one is the top priority? Is it Ohtani? Is it the healthy rotation? Is it Pujols staying healthy? Which one is it for you?
I think that, you know, I would say that the starting rotation staying healthy, but since we've already kind of gone over that, I'll also touch on the Ohtani stuff, because I think that's going to be, you know, kind of the most intriguing aspect for the Angels this year. I mean, you know, there really hasn't been a two-way star in the majors since Babe Ruth, so there is really no framework, no blueprint for the Angels to follow with him. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see, you know, what kind of plan they come up with to kind of accommodate Ohtani's desire to be that two-way player in the majors. And you know, whether or not Ohtani can succeed, you know, as he's done in Japan, you know, I think everyone kind of expects him to succeed as a pitcher, but I think not as many people are quite sold on his abilities to succeed as a hitter, especially since, you know, he's going to have some limited at-bats as a DH probably. So, you know, I'm wondering if he struggles, if the Angels will kind of give him some leeway to kind of work out the kinks, or, you know, if they'll kind of end up pulling the plug on the experiment. So I think, you know, there's just so many aspects about this that are going to be fascinating to watch with the Angels and with Ohtani. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how it all plays out.
Yeah, all eyes on Shohei Ohtani when it comes to spring training and when the season starts, but also eyes on Albert Pujols, because from what we gather, what we know, and what you've been reporting, he's going to be expected to play more at first base to allow Ohtani to DH when he's not pitching, right? He's owed $114 million over the next 4 years. He's 39 years old. In my eyes, it doesn't feel right to say that he needs a bounce back year. I feel like at that age, you're not bouncing back anymore, but he does need a better year. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's coming off a pretty trying season, you know, probably the worst in his career, which has, you know, been so decorated between, you know, what he did with the Cardinals and what he did in his first couple of years with the Angels. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, last year you kind of saw him, you know, it seemed like his age kind of caught up to him. You know, because he'd had a lot of, you know, lower body surgeries over the last couple of years, you know, he hadn't really been able to enjoy a full offseason, you know, with training and conditioning and everything. So he always kind of arrived to spring training a little, you know, suboptimal shape. And I think that kind of, you know, resulted in him being a little heavier and him losing some foot speed. And I think that really hurt him when it came to, you know, beating out ground balls. And I think that was one of the reasons why his batting average was so suppressed and he ended up making so many outs. So, yeah, I mean, I think that now that he was able to go through this entire offseason without any sort of surgery, you know, he really had the opportunity to get back into his, you know, normal training regimen. And, you know, by the look of some pictures, it does look like he's lost some weight. So, you know, the Angels kind of hope that all of that will kind of manifest itself in a stronger, faster Albert Pujols, who will kind of, you know, be able to regain a little bit of the form that he had seemingly lost last year. So, yeah, I mean, I think that he will be a pretty big piece of this lineup. You know, I do expect him probably to be somewhere, you know, in the middle and somewhere in the middle of the order, you know, and he's kind of been the Angels' most best run producer over the last couple of years. So I think that will be key, especially since, you know, he'll have Mike Trout and Justin up in front of him likely. So I think there will definitely be a lot of run producing opportunities for him. And he's also kind of approaching a lot more milestones. He's only about 30 or 40 hits away from reaching 3,000 hits for his career. And I'm sure he'll continue to climb up that home run leaderboard as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think it will be interesting to see what the Angels can kind of get out of Albert Pujols over the remainder of his contract. But, you know, I think he still has the potential to produce and to be kind of impactful for the Angels.
Maria, you are going to be busy this season, to say the least. But I don't know if I ever told you, I was back in St. Louis maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and I went to a hot yoga studio, and I looked to my left, and Albert Pujols was in my hot yoga class, dominating, doing better than every single person that was in there. And there were a lot of women who looked like they probably did this regularly, and he was doing an incredible job. And I think... you know, he hasn't been the healthiest, but I think that that's probably something that's kept him playing the game until 39 years old, is doing something like hot yoga. It was amazing watching him do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess now I know where his longevity comes from, so that's good to know.
Yes, yeah. I would be interested to know if he still does it. I would be madly impressed if he did that.
I'll have to ask him come spring training.
Yes, ask him. Let me know. All right, another superstar, Mike Trout. We haven't talked about Mike Trout in a while, but we're not going to focus too much on him. But since the Angels signed him, they've wielded one of the worst farm systems. But that changed in 2017. The Angels got Shohei Ohtani and Kevin Maiton from the Braves. And this is something that the Angels are very, very proud of, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that, you know, when Billy Epler kind of took over as GM, he did inherit, you know, Mike Trout, best player in the game, but he also inherited a farm system that was kind of regarded as, you know, one of the worst in the game. So, you know, I think ever since he's taken over, one of his, you know, goals has been to kind of improve that farm system and kind of, you know, infuse it with fresh talent that had been kind of depleted under previous regimes. So, and I think he definitely managed to do that in 2017. I think our friends at MLB Pipeline rated the Angels as having one of the most improved farm systems of the year. So, you know, the addition of Ohtani, who I believe is rated the number one prospect in the game right now, and Kevin Maiton, who the Angels picked up after he was released by the Braves, and, you know, Levon Soto as well, who was another former Braves prospect. I think that those three additions really helped kind of improve this farm system. And, you know, the Angels also have a lot of young guys and kind of the lower levels of the minors who look promising. So, you know, as they kind of continue to work their way up the system, I think that the Angels will continue to improve and have more of a, you know, steady talent pipeline that they've kind of been lacking the last couple of years.
All right. Well, I guess we'll find out if those guys can also come to fruition and help the Angels in any way. But I think that the product that's going to be on the field for 2018 is pretty stacked. And like I said, Maria, you're going to be a very busy woman, which is exciting and awesome. And I know that you've got a trip to get to, so I'm going to let you go. It's officially the preseason. We're out of the off season, Maria. So we're right around the corner. Pitchers and catchers are reporting for spring training. And I'm excited to talk to you about all these crazy things that are about to happen this season. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Danny.
All right. If you need more of your Angels fix, you can go to angels.com and check out all of Maria's work. I'm Danny Wexelman, and this has been MLB.com Extras. Welcome back to MLB.com Extras. I'm Danny Wexelman with Greg Johns, who covers the Mariners for MLB.com. And Greg, we've had a little time off. We haven't talked in about a week, but we have lots and lots to get to. But first, Happy New Year. Happy 2018.
Happy New Year to you as well. It's good to be starting a new one.
Are you used to saying 2018 yet, writing 2018, or are you still in the 2017 mindset?
Good question. Haven't written much. So as soon as the checks start rolling, I guess we'll find out. But, yeah, I'm ready. 2018 sounds good to me.
And do you have any personal resolutions, Greg, that you are trying to hold to this year?
Not that I can share publicly.
Okay. All right. But he's got some goals. So, all right, we'll switch gears from you to the Mariners. And we're going to start our podcast off with one goal, one resolution that you could make for the Mariners. What would you make?
That's a great question. And probably the same as mine that I'm not going to share. They need to get in the gym. They need to be healthy. They need to You know, I think we all do it. You know, I got to lose 5 pounds. I got to lose 10 pounds. For the Mariners, it's just stay healthy. I think it's that simple. If they can stay healthy this year, they're going to be what they had hoped to be last year and maybe a little better. And, you know, I think you just look back. You can't ignore a fact that a team that used 40 pitchers in a season, which is tied a major league record, and 17 different starters, how much that affected them. You can't ignore that. And if they can get back to using the guys they expect at the top of the rotation, the guys they expect through the lineup, you know, this is going to be a team that could be a contender for a playoff spot. And I think that's the big goal, that the guys they got are the guys they want, and they just need to keep them on the field.
Right, and you just wrote about five questions that still need answering for the Mariners, and two of those questions were, can the rotation stay healthy? Can James Paxton and King Felix stay healthy? Because they're cornerstones of this team, like you just had mentioned. The other point, though, the other question that stood out to me that now I want to ask you about is D. Gordon and his success in center field. We know he's 29. We know that he's just learning this position for the first time to play it regularly in his major league career. So that, how important, where does that rank? Does that rank above the team staying healthy in your eyes, or is that equally as important? What do you say?
Well, I think when you're talking questions, and I think every Mariner fan will probably tell you the top five questions on this team are starting pitching right now. I think everybody's kind of screaming, and why aren't they going out and getting more starting pitching? And DePoto's kind of taking a different tack and look to beef up the bullpen this year in the offseason. And he sees the rotation differently, I think, than the fans. But I acknowledge what the fans are seeing. The questions that we talk about are, you know, what you just mentioned. Can Paxton stay healthy? Can Felix kind of be back to what he is? And can Mike Leake and Erasmo Ramirez be as good as they were at the end of last year and things like that? Can some of the young guys step up? So, you know, pitching, I think, is the big question. But you mentioned D. Gordon. I think that's a fascinating question, and one I'm going to be watching closely in spring training. His transition to center field is going to be fascinating to watch. I mean, this guy's played, you know, he's a Gold Glove second baseman in Florida, and now he's being asked to play center field. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I talked to him just before Christmas, Danny. He was down in Miami and had just worked out with Chris Prieto, the Mariners' new outfield coach, had flown down to Florida to spend a couple of days with him. And I think D is probably the only outfielder in baseball who's already working this winter on routes and footwork and plays with the wall, things like that. He's out there every day already. You know, just he wants to hit the ground running when they get to spring training. He says, I'm ready to do whatever they want. You know, it was a shock when they first traded for him and said, hey, we're moving you to center. But, you know, after that settled in, he said, hey, I'm going to do whatever it takes. You know, I turn myself into a Gold Glove second baseman. I want to be the best center fielder they can be. So he's an interesting guy, and certainly the element that he can bring, the athleticism and speed, is pretty imposing. So, you know, can he play center field? I think he's a good athlete, and it's going to be fun to watch him adapt out there.
I think that he is going to fill a lot of seats. I think that Mariners fans are going to come out, obviously, to see the other incredible guys on this team, but I think that he's going to draw a lot of interest in that way as well. And the other thing that he could draw interest to is where he's batting in the lineup. And manager Scott Servais said that he's going to bat leadoff. And that means that Gene Segura will not be batting leadoff, but that makes the most sense, right?
I think it makes 1,000% sense. I mean, Gordon is a guy, he's been a leadoff hitter all his life, and with darn good reason. I mean, this guy led the National League in stolen bases 3 of the last 4 years, and the 1 year he didn't lead, he didn't play half the season. So he can run like anybody in the American League will, and why not put him atop the lineup? Put Segura, who's a good bat guy that can move a runner over, can do what he wants, can handle a bat as well as any guy I've seen. He's getting bat on the ball consistently. And put them in front of Robinson Cano, Nelson Cruz, Kyle Seager in the middle of that lineup. And not coincidentally, that would give you a left-right, left-right, left combination to top your lineup and make things tough for opposing managers when they try to match up late in games with relief pitchers. So, yeah, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't put D. Gordon first. He gets on base, he runs, he does those things, he can bunt, he's a guy that just is going to put pressure on opposing pitchers. And you mentioned fans. I do think fans like to watch teams that are aggressive and can challenge. This is what the Mariners wanted to be last year. I remember in spring training, Scott Servais saying, hey, we're a team that's going to challenge opposing pitchers and make them nervous. We want to make guys on the mound, you know, worrying about what we're doing. And it didn't quite come to fruition as much as they wanted, but I think you're going to have a tough time not being that kind of team with D. Gordon at the top of the lineup.
All right, so everyone needs to pay close attention. I think that first at bat, I think people are going to stand up. I think they're going to be excited for him. I think it's going to set a tone. So I'm hoping for the best for D. Gordon. I feel like he's a guy that you want on your team and you want on your side. And so hopefully that all works out. Another guy who obviously draws interest is Kyle Seager, who affectionately is sometimes known as Corey's brother. Corey Seager, of course, who plays for the Dodgers. But Kyle has been cast in the spotlight this week. We're ringing in the new year. And, Greg, he was dubbed the most consistent hitter in the majors. That's a pretty lofty crown to wear. And you've watched him play since 2011. It's about time he got the spotlight, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you talk about Seager, that's a great way to look at him, is Mr. Consistent. This is a guy who every year you put him out there and he's gonna hit 260, 270. He's going to put up 25 to 30 homers. He's going to knock in 80 to 100 runs and play a very good third base. And it's just what he does, and he plays. He's played the last 6 years. He's never missed more than, I think, 6-7 games in a season. I mean, he's a guy, he's out there. He's played way more games than any third baseman over the last 5 or 6 years in baseball. He's just been Mr. Durable there. And managers love him. There's a reason why, because, you know, you go to pencil in your lineup and you know who your third baseman is, you know what he's going to give you, and he's going to be a good, solid guy there and a good bat in the middle of the lineup as well. It's just a great teammate. So, yeah, Kyle Seager, one of my favorite guys to cover, and certainly a big part of the Mariners in the middle of that lineup. And, you know, you mentioned Tom. He's getting paid $19 million this year. It's interesting. This would have been his free agent year, and he bought out they gave him a long-term contract 3 years ago, and now is when it kicks in with the big bucks. So, you know, he's a guy that is not he is Corey's brother, but he is a huge part of the Mariners and with good reason. And I think, you know, maybe a little underappreciated because he's just a quiet guy who goes about his business. He's not Robinson Cano. He's not Nelson Cruz. But you ask those guys who they want to line up with him, and Kyle Seager is that guy. So, yeah, Kyle's a fun guy to watch, fun guy to cover, and certainly I know the Mariners love having him on the team.
It's so interesting to me, Greg, that someone like this, someone who's our most consistent hitter in baseball, is overlooked. There are, I feel, a couple of guys in the game who don't quite get the recognition, whether or not they're playing on a team that doesn't have the media or the region that they're in, whatever the reason may be, or there are other superstars on the team who are louder, have more social media presence, whatever it may be. But something, the fact that this guy is so consistent and so durable, and he's not flashy. I think I just love the fact that he got the spotlight. And again, him being Corey's brother, you know, that was the Players Weekend nickname that he took. And he's so humble. That's such a humbling thing. And you don't see that in players. You don't see that in athletes a lot. The fact that he can recognize that his younger brother is successful and he's good at what he does, and maybe there are times his numbers are a little bit better, but it's, I don't know. I just thought it was really cool that he got this recognition.
Yeah, and Kyle will be the first to tell you he's coming off a year that was not his best year. I mean, he'd been a guy that consistency was a little higher level the previous 4 or 5 years, and he struggled a little bit. His average is down last year, and he got off to a slow start. He's been a traditionally slow starter, and he just usually makes up for it with a big, huge tear at some point. He didn't quite have that big, huge tear. He ended up, you know, his numbers were down. I think he's going to come to camp this spring with something to prove. And you mentioned the humbleness. He's a guy that I can, since Corey was drafted, I've never been around somebody who's been as proud of their little brother as Kyle, and as praiseworthy of him, and said from the start, this guy is better than me. This guy, he's a high school player. This guy's going to be better than me. And this is when Kyle was coming off an All-Star season himself in 2014 and a Gold Glove, and he said, my little brother's going to be better than me. He loves his little brother, and he's a big supporter of him. But at the same time, Kyle's a proud man. He's willing to, you know, say, hey, my brother's really good and stuff, and then be that good brother. But he's got a drive and a determination, and there's no doubt he's out there playing ball to be the best he can be, and that's pretty good. He's I think, going to have a pretty good year this year.
I like it. I like it. All right, Greg, last thing we're going to address, and it's not something that's probably a popular topic in Seattle, but with the Bills squeaking into the playoffs, Greg, Seattle now has the longest sports postseason drought. Is this the year it's all going to change?
Ouch. Yeah, not a popular topic. I think the Mariners are tired of hearing about it. They've been tired of hearing about their drought for a long time, and with good reason. That it's not something you want to be bragging on as being the longest team without a playoff berth. They've been pushing hard. You know, their new ownership wants to end that as much as anybody. And can they do it? They're in a division that's pretty tough. I mean, they got the Astros sitting on top of there, and that's a pretty big climb. But I like to look at the Mariners, what I think they could have been last year. We talked about the injuries. You know, they're coming off an 86-win season last year, and what they thought was a better team, and things just didn't come their way. It didn't fall in place with the injuries that we talked about. You know, I think they're a better team now with the additions they've made, if that pitching can hold up, as they hope. And can they be around 86? Can they improve on that? Well, 85 wins got the Twins in the playoffs last year. That's a wild card team. So, you know, we're not talking about having to win 100 games to catch the Astros. You're talking about having to win 88, 90 to ensure yourself of a wild card spot. And I certainly think that's within their reach if they play well, if they stay healthy, and if things fall into place as they should. So can they end it? This would be a great year to do it. You know, as Mariner fans will tell you, they've been saying that for a long time, and that's the way fans are and the way teams are. They're more than ready to end it. Would love to see that be this year. It's, of course, that would be a fun thing. I think if you get the Seattle Mariners in a postseason, it's going to be good for baseball, and it's certainly good for Seattle.
All right, Greg. Well, I think we've officially exited the offseason. We are entering preseason. We are around the corner from pitchers and catchers reporting and spring training and all the fun. So baseball fans, I think, can start to get their motors running. I know I'm excited to talk to you because 2018's here. We're ready to roll. So I appreciate your time as always, Greg. Thank you.
You got it, Danny. We're counting down to spring training as we pass the new year, so that's when I know it starts to come. I start looking at the calendar and seeing the pitcher's catcher's report here in February 14th, which isn't that far away, so getting ready for some baseball.
That's right. All right, if you need any more of your Mariners fix, you can go to mariners.com and read all of Greg's work. I'm Danny Wexelman, and we will talk to you next time.